Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
Good evening, I'm Roger Watterson. In this election programme, we continue our series of conversations with those retiring members of the House of Keys who will be seeking re-election in September. Our guest this evening is the present Minister of Infrastructure. He's announced his intention to stand again in the general election, but this time not for the Russian constituency, but for the constituency he's represented since 2003, but for the newly formed constituency of Arbury, Castletown and Maloo. His personal politics have always had a particularly strong nationalistic flavour. He's a fluent Manx speaker. He recently said that at the heart of Manx politics is who we are, where we live and where we come from. And this should give us a strong political focus and the will to look after ourselves. He's on record for saying that once the chips are down, we cannot rely on the support of the United Kingdom. Recently, he called for a new approach to bring politics back to a disillusioned public. Well, this evening, we're going to take a short journey through his past, present and political future. We welcome Phil Gawne.
Past the night.
Well, Phil, bring back politics to the people is the campaign slogan that I've noticed later. Call for a new approach. What does that mean?
Well, what it means is that we as government, over the course of the last 5 years, and I know this because I've been looking through all the incredible achievements that we've delivered, we've delivered a lot, a really big amount of really good and positive things. But if you talk to a lot of people on the doorstep, they are somewhat disillusioned with government. They were 5 years ago, and they were 5 years before that. What I'm concerned about is that there's an increasing disconnect amongst some elements of our community from politics. Politics has to be important to people's lives because it affects everybody's lives. And, you know, I'm standing in the new constituency of Arbury, Castletown and Maloo, as you said, not because I'm wanting to leave the old Russian, but the old Russian no longer exists. It's part of the old Russian and part of Arbury, Arbury, Castletown and Maloo forms the new constituency.
You say this disillusioned public, how does that demonstrate itself, apart from people say it, but they don't substantiate it, really, do they?
Well, I think it's decreasing turnout at polls. That's happening. That's been happening for a long time. And I think the significantly more negative comment that we begin to read, certainly on social media, but also in the press, that negativity is far more prominent in Tynwald than it ever used to be. When I was first elected, there was a far more collaborative approach. And again, this is very much part or heart of my politics. I believe in teamwork. I believe in working with colleagues. That's why I believe I've delivered 90% of the 80 manifesto commitments that I put forward at the last election. That can't be done if you're isolationist, if you work on your own, if you are forever carping from the sidelines. You've got to work as a team if you're going to get anything done in Manx politics.
Yes, now, you say that there's a lack of participation in the democratic process, but does the process enable people to participate?
Well, absolutely not. I think, again, we've got to recognise that the political processes that we currently use haven't really changed much from the 1870s, was it, when we first got the vote. We've got to start thinking or recognising that there is lots of modern technology available now. I've done some...
So would you like people to vote online?
Well, I've already done some experiments with direct democracy, and certainly if elected, I would be wanting to do more to encourage people to participate more in decision making, because that actually gives people, first of all, it empowers people, it makes gives people more self-confidence, but it also gives people a greater grasp of the issues, because people tend to look more into issues if they know that they are going to be responsible in some way for the outcome of a particular decision.
Yes, now the establishment, you say, is running out of time to deliver, and they ignore this mood at its peril. So what do you mean by running out of time to deliver? What's going to be the consequences, in your view, if they do run out of time?
Well, I think the risk is that we become increasingly destabilised as a country. I mean, we've already got some fairly major...
Sorry, in what way? I mean, well, social disruption, disorder?
No, I think... We've already got some major hurdles to try and overcome, some very, very significant problems facing the Isle of Man. But I think the constant, fairly negative message that we've had to put out over the course of the last 5 years is one that the public have got tired of. They want to hear, I think anyway, a message of hope. You know, I Around about this time last year, I'd pretty much made my mind up that I didn't want to stand again. The pressure was getting too much. It was it's a very difficult job to do, and I thought, no, I've done my time, so to speak. However, I then started thinking, I actually love this island. I think it's a fantastic place. I really truly believe in the people. I want to help deliver a better future for the Isle of Man, and I really do believe that the Isle of Man could be seen around the world as a shining example of how to do things right. We are already ahead of the game in many areas, but there's a whole load more things we could do. The Isle of Man is a place that has a huge amount going for us, but we need to have the self-belief and confidence to actually go out there and promote the island and actually start talking the whole island up, giving positive messages about the positive future that lies ahead, and not focusing on all the difficult obstacles that we have to overcome.
But you also said that unless the public play a better part, now I would have to say that I think that's up to serving politicians to an extent to inspire them to play a better part, but the possibility of more intolerant politicians being elected with a tiny majority.
Yes, of course, that's the inevitable consequence of a falling number of people coming out to vote. The fewer people that turn out to vote, the easier it is for people with minority views to gain popularity. And again, I think that would be a concern. I think the vast majority of people who live on the Isle of Man are tolerant. They are keen to have stability. All they really want from life is a good, secure place to live. And decent incomes and an enjoyable sort of lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I think we do have, but the risk is that when we are forever talking of the problems that lie ahead and not giving that kind of vision of this fantastic island that we can be, the radically improved government that can be delivering far more efficient services, all the really positive things, the really good, strong economy that we can have in the future. These are things that we have to believe in. I know that we can deliver, and I'm really keen to try and play my part if supported at the forthcoming election.
I have to say to you that some of these are fine words, and they're quite an interesting and attractive shopping list, but you've been a senior figure in the political elite for the past 5 years. You're in the Council of Ministers, the very elite that you are criticising. You're actually saying that the body that you belong to hasn't performed properly.
No. What I'm saying is it has performed, but it hasn't performed as well as it could. And I think that anybody, if you go out in the street and ask anyone, are you perfect? I would be surprised if anyone would be prepared to say they were. I can probably think of one or two Timbrell members that may believe that they're perfect, but I certainly don't think I'm perfect. And I don't believe that the last government has been perfect. But I do believe we've achieved a lot. But I think some of our messaging has been too negative. I think some of the decisions that we've taken haven't been as good as they might have been. I think particularly whilst we talk about protecting the vulnerable, some of the actions we've taken have been less than supportive of the most vulnerable people in society. Now, unfortunately, when you're trying to balance the books, rebalance the government's books, it's very difficult when the vast majority of your spend is going towards supporting the most vulnerable people in society. It's always difficult to get that right. But I think on the whole, government's done a reasonable job.
There also quite a few people feel very sore that a significant portion of the money is going to support public service pensions.
Yes, but it always has been. And what we've done, again, there's some very interesting rhetoric. And again, this is probably why I'm so keen to get the public more excited by politics. Public sector pensions, let's look at the fact. 7 years ago, there were 17 public sector pension schemes. They were all controlled by the United Kingdom government. Our schemes were all analogous to UK schemes. So about 5 years ago, we changed to a unified scheme that we had control over in the Isle of Man. We made assumptions at that time. We assumed that the numbers of public employees would stay pretty much the same. We assumed the economy would grow. Neither of these things have happened. We assumed that wages would increase slightly. That hasn't really happened. So based on all those assumptions not being delivered, we've now had to revisit public sector pensions, but we have come forward with a plan. It's a workable plan. So actually, where we are now compared with where we were 7 years ago when we had no plan and no control, I think is a considerably better place to be than we've been for probably the last two or three generations.
But every future government is going to have to rely on just that, assumptions.
Well, of course it is. And of course, the other thing about public sector pensions, or indeed any pensions and assumptions made around pensions, we had one of the actuaries came over to give us some briefings on these topics. And they pointed out that with a relatively small change in assumption over the course of the last 12 months, there had been £1 billion increase in the liability for public sector pensions. That same small change, if it went in the opposite direction, could significantly reduce the liability for public sector pensions. And I think one of the mistakes we fall into as government is believing that we are a business. We aren't a business. That's not to say we can't learn from good business practices. We are, though, a government, and governments last forever. Governments go on, and probably I do as well. But the sorts of fixes that we need in relation to pensions are long-term, generational fixes. They are not short-term fixes. And trying to fix this particular problem based on the current economic outlook, assuming that that's how it's going to be for the next 50 years, is a very dangerous thing to do.
Now, you're producing a new manifesto. It'll be published, no doubt, shortly. And you, through it, you'll go through a whole catalogue of things, as indeed your 2011 manifesto did. But the question is, in our political system as it is today, what can one person do? Apart from make a bit of a noise.
And I think that's a really good question. And I've always felt that the answer, which often is trotted out, which is, well, one man can't do very much on their own. They've got to, there's only so much you can deliver. Well, actually, what you have to do is you work with your colleagues. You work as a team player. And I made 80 different pledges in my manifesto. I've delivered, in my view, about 92% of those pledges. Some may say that I haven't quite managed all that I think I have. But even if it was 75%, that's still a pretty good success rate. And, there's some fairly meaty pledges that I've listed. So it is possible to deliver, provided you put in your manifesto things that are reasonable and achievable, and provided that you work with your colleagues. It is so essential, in fact, in the Isle of Man government, if you are going to get elected, that you work with colleagues. You are a team player. That's not to say that we shouldn't have legitimate criticism when things go wrong. Of course we need proper scrutiny of government. But if Tynwald was able to work more collaboratively and more as a team, probably like we used to when I was first elected, I think we could deliver an awful lot more than the some of the backbiting negative politics that's been going on in recent years.
With the absence of party politics, how much did you think a personal ambition and career ambition creeps in with the members? How does it influence their decisions? In the reform of government?
I think it does with some. I've never seen politics as a career. Politics for me is a passion. It is about wanting to change the world, and maybe that sounds a bit romantic and extravagant, but that is me. I wouldn't be doing this for a job. I don't think anyone really who had any degree of sanity would want to be a politician as a sort of career move. If you are capable of doing this job, you're probably capable of earning substantial amounts of money in the private sector. So why would you want all this additional hassle?
Well, that is a good question.
Yeah, I am in politics because I really passionately wanted to improve the island. I believe in this island. I believe in the people of the island. And I strongly believe that the Isle of Man can be the sort of vision for the future that all the sort of countries surrounding us will be flocking to the island to see just how well the Isle of Man can do compared with the rest of the world.
People of the island, you've made that reference two or three times in this conversation, but the people of the island are not the same people in many respects as they were 20, 30, 40 years ago. We have a very different mix now.
Yes, but they are people who have chosen to come here. The vast majority of people anyway living on the island are here because they want to be here, and I think that's a good thing. I'm not a racist. I don't believe in sort of any sort of discrimination against anybody for any reason. I think we should be fair and embracing of all cultures, and The people who live and work on the Isle of Man are here for a reason. The vast majority, as I say, are here because they love the place and they, like me, believe in the island and want to make it better.
At the last election, however, you said that one of your planks of your election platform was to introduce robust measures to control immigration.
That was in relation to the work permit system, which I strongly believe in, because, again, people who live and work on the Isle of Man need some level of support from government to ensure that we have quality jobs and a reasonable and fair living wage for people.
Does it work?
Yeah, I think it does. I think there are problems, as ever. There's always problems with any system that government creates, but I think on the whole it works well. I think we've got two ends to of a problem. On the sort of the lower end in terms of qualifications, one of the issues that we face on the island is that a number of Manx workers are unprepared to actually do some of the more menial jobs at the wages that are offered. Then at the other end, you have some of the more advanced business sectors that we have on the island requiring quite specialist skills, and perhaps the work permit system needs tweaking, and indeed has been tweaked, to allow a more easy approach from those sectors to encourage their staff to come and live and work on the island.
Well, in this 2016 election programme, we're talking to Phil Gawne, who will be seeking election to serve as MHK for Arbury, Castletown and Maloo in September. We talked about a number of issues here, negative messages, improving the way the island works, can-do approach, there's a whole series of things. But I cannot help but think that our existing system is almost designed to stop that. How can one person cut through this historic layer of bureaucracy?
Yes, and that's not easy, I have to say, because I've certainly been trying in the last 2 years in the Department of Infrastructure. And every time you challenge a rule, you try and sort of push things or make the rules fit the circumstances, you get criticised, no matter how minor
the
transgression. The system is clearly designed to hold things back. Mm. And, you know, I think of all the manifesto commitments I'll be making next time, the most difficult to achieve but the most important will be that cultural change that's often talked about in government, but it's really important that we put it in place. We've got to give the necessary steps to allow public servants to adopt a can-do approach. I always say to any of the officers who work in my departments or areas of influence, imagine what the man on the street would say about the decision you're about to make. If they would say you are about to make a really silly decision, then you're about to make the wrong decision. Even if the legislation requires you to make that decision, or indeed financial constraints require you to make that decision, if it's a decision that most people would think was silly, it's the wrong decision. So you need then to come to me as minister and we'll change the law or we'll find the resource to make it happen. And I think that's what we need to be doing across the public service. There needs to be that clear message from the politicians at the top that we are encouraging civil servants to think differently, not just to follow the rules, not just, well, obviously you have to follow the rules, but if the rules don't fit the circumstance, come and talk to the politicians and we'll change them. Unfortunately, what's been demonstrated certainly in the last 5 years, and I think it was clear as well in the 5 years before that, any civil servant that tries to put their head above the parapet is often shot down by what purports to be scrutiny in Tynwald and in the media. And I think we've got to somehow engender the sort of level of encouragement that civil servants need to actually start taking that little bit of an extra risk, to believe that they are going to be supported by their politicians, and they are going to be able to actually dramatically change the way in which we do business.
You don't want a power struggle,
and not hold everything back.
You don't want a power struggle between the senior level at that civil service level and the members, though. In some countries, that does happen.
Yes, absolutely. And it should always be clear, in my view, that the politicians lead the government. They provide the inspiration and the policies. That's how it should be, although there are plenty of departments that I've been to where it's been said to me by senior civil servants that actually the minister turns up on his first day in the office and said, OK, what do you want me to do? Which isn't how it should be at all. But I'm sure it happens. But I suspect in the last 5 years, and I would have to say this, wouldn't I, the ministers that we have in are much more switched on in terms of politics and really keen to make these changes.
Well, you go on to say in your current campaign that you will support measures to give the public a greater role in policy developments and decision making. Now, how do it with a disillusioned public that we talked about earlier, how do you get that connection to make them take part?
Well, I think you only have to look at the work we've been doing with local authorities. Now, there's been this huge level of mistrust between central and local government. I'm not saying for one moment
that
we've...
You said that in the past tense. Yeah. I think it's still there.
Well, I'm not saying for one moment that we've overcome that completely, but we have made a huge stride forward. What we've achieved in the last 2 years is more than has been achieved in the past 50 years in relation to local government reform. That's because I've gone out with colleagues, Chris Thomas in particular, and we have talked to local authorities. We've not gone out and said, we're the government and we've decided this is how it's going to be. We've gone out and we've talked to people, we've engaged with people, we've empowered them, and that's, I believe, the way forward. And when people are see that we do actually really respect them, they take a far... more productive approach. The problem I think we've had is that we have a tick box procedure in place for consultation. The consultation is produced. It doesn't matter whether anyone's able to read it, let alone willing to read it. The consultation is sent out, the box is ticked. Actually, we want meaningful consultation that actually people can read and can understand. I'm not saying that in any sort of disparaging way about the people. I'm just very much aware that some of the language that we use in some of this, a lot of government documents actually is impenetrable. We've got to make it easier for people to read. I think DEFA in particular has done some excellent work on that, particularly since Minister Ronan's been in there, in simplifying the language to make it easier for people to follow.
Now, a lot of your other comments, and we haven't got time to explore them now, talk about protecting and promoting the culture and heritage of the island. The island is a nation. But you also go on to talk about protecting ourselves, not just from Europe, but from the UK. And you want to set up a commission to explore the consequences, possibilities and costs of independence.
Yes, absolutely. I think what the United Kingdom government has demonstrated in the last few months is that it had no plan for Brexit. Can we, I suppose, trust a government that was prepared to go out and ask such a fundamentally important question but didn't have a plan? And I think you'd have to say the answer is no, we can't. My view is that in the future we will always not only have to but want to have a good, strong working relationship with the UK. But the future of the UK is uncertain. There's a possibility that Scotland may seek further referendum on independence. We don't know what the future of the UK's relationship with the EU is. And I, for one, believe that at this time of uncertainty, a little bit of extra uncertainty about the future constitutional position of the Isle of Man wouldn't go amiss if, in having a fundamental review of the options, we actually developed better options for the future. Now, I'm not saying that there are better options. I'm not saying that we must go independent. What I'm saying is we should at least consider the options to see what's going to be in the best interests of ourselves here in the Isle of Man.
Well, there have been a few, of course, who've mooted it before, but it's never been officially considered as a possible policy.
Well, I'm not sure that's true. Actually, back in 2000, there was a report into this, and several senior politicians who were around at that time, I've spoken to in the run-up to this election, have said, yes, this is the time you should be reviewing that document to see whether independence for the Isle of Man may well be the way forward.
Well, Phil Gawne, thank you. I would like to talk to you longer, but we've run out of time, completely out of time. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Roger.
And there we must bring to the end this 2016 election programme. I've been in conversation with the retiring Minister of Infrastructure and MHK for Rushen, Phil Gawne. He's seeking election in September to the newly formed constituency of Arbury, Castletown and Maloo. Catherine Nicol is the producer, and I'm Roger Watterson. Goodbye.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys General Election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.